From the editors at Paranormal Underground and Ghost Knight Publishing, welcome to Paranormal Underground Presents, where you can explore the unexplained with our panel and special guests.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the big show, podcast number 2. Glad to have you with us. I'm Karen Frazier. I am the managing editor at Paranormal Underground.
Let's introduce my co-host for the day. He is our science editor, and he's an archaeologist, and you know him by, again, say it.
Vinu Makua.
Vinu Makua. One of these days I'm going to get it right. Vinu Makua, but he is J.D. Harrison. Hey, J.D., thanks for sitting in.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
We have a great guest today. It's Jeffrey Keene. He's the author of the book Someone Else's Yesterday.
Yeah, Jeff's book is very interesting. It chronicles his account of his life as General John B. Gordon, a Confederate general during the Civil War. Mr. Keene's book details the life of the general and his journey after he realized that he was a reincarnation, or that he feels that he is a reincarnation of General Gordon. His physical appearance to the general is striking, as are his accounts of the general's life. Should be a very interesting guest.
Yeah, you know, I interviewed him for our September magazine, and he's one of my favorite interviews that I've done. He's a really great guy to talk to. If you want to read about Jeff's story, you can go to paranormalunderground.net. It's www.paranormalunderground.net. It's free. And you can just look at the past issues and read his story. So let's go ahead and introduce our panel.
Today we have with us Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief of Paranormal Underground magazine, that can be found at www.paranormalunderground.net. It is a monthly publication that chronicles paranormal activity and happenings, and not just with paranormal investigations, but also all aspects of paranormal activity, such as UFO activity, cryptids, and anything else that you could think of. It's a very excellent magazine. Cheryl does a very good job on that.
Thank you so much, JD. I appreciate that a lot. I am so happy to be here. Our reincarnation issue was one of my favorites so far that we've done for Paranormal Underground. And specifically, the article on Jeffrey Keene really kind of blew my mind, to be honest. And it's one of the most compelling cases for reincarnation that I've ever read about personally. And there's a lot out there. And so I'm really looking forward to speaking to him today.
Great. Well, yeah, and he's very interesting. You're going to have a good time with him. I wanted to mention before we introduce our next panelist that you can also go onto our YouTube channel, which is Paranormal UG. And if you select our playlists, and let me see the name of the playlist, and you go to profiles, the very first profile that we have listed, Reincarnation Born Again, is Jeff's appearance on Sci-Fi's program Proof Positive. So that can give you a little more background about Jeff as well. Anyway, sorry about that. Let's introduce our next panelist. He is our publisher. You know him, you love him. It's Chad Wilson. Hey, Chad.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Are you ready to go?
Yes, I look forward to talking to Mr. Keene. I think it will be interesting.
Good. Before we introduce our guest, I'd like to read a passage from his book just so you can get an idea of what the flavor of it is. A wave of grief, sadness, and anger washed over me. Without warning, I was suddenly consumed by sensations. Burning tears ran down my cheek. It became difficult to breathe. I gasped for air as I stood transfixed in the old roadbed. To this day, I cannot tell you how much time transpired, but as these feelings, this emotional overload passed, I found myself exhausted as if I had run a marathon. Crawling up the steep embankment to get out of the road, I turned and looked back. I was a bit shaken, to say the least, and wondered what had just taken place. It was difficult getting back to the car because I felt so weak. I had regained most of my normal composure on the way back and said nothing to Anna about what had just happened. What could I say? How could I explain it to her? I didn't have the answers, just questions. All right, well, you just heard a passage from his book, and now I'd like to introduce our guest. As I said, he's the author of Someone Else's Yesterday, and he was featured in our September issue of the magazine, which was our reincarnation issue. Please welcome to the show Jeffrey Keene. Hey, Jeffrey.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. So what we're going to do is we're going to have our three panelists ask you 10 minutes of questions, and we'll get started. Who was first? Cheryl?
Yeah. Thanks, Karen. Hi, Jeff, and I wanted to thank you for being here today on our podcast. I'm just going to go ahead and get started with my questions. Can you start off by talking about the exact moment that convinced you that you once lived a past life as a Confederate soldier, specifically General John B. Gordon?
There was no exact moment. It was just a culmination of a lot of things that, well, everybody has strange things happen through their life. And mine just tended to be like puzzle pieces fitting into place. But probably the one that pushed it over for me was seeing a photograph of John Gordon. And I tell people I know the face well. I shave it every morning.
Can you talk a little bit about that then? How did you feel when you first saw that picture of General Gordon?
I thought I might have been losing a little bit. I wasn't into reincarnation or anything like that. You know, I always liked mysteries, you know, and UFOs and little, you know, strange stories like that. Everybody likes, you know, Loch Ness Monster and things. Mm-hmm. But when things start popping up in your own life, when the things that happened to me down to the sunken road, and other things that just led me to that picture, buying the magazine, the only Civil War magazine or book that I had ever purchased in my life up until that point, and that just happened to be the one that told about John Gordon's story at the sunken road and what happened on that date, and then showed the picture. But it's quite a shock, and I took the magazine into work with me, and friend, one of the dispatchers there I've known for 25 years or more, and just mentioned a little bit about the story, and she looked on the page, and there was a quote there that I had said to the palm reader I'd been talking to at the party I went to, and she said, oh, here's what you said to the palm reader. I said, yeah. So she looked over to the page next to the page with the text, and there's a picture of Gordon. She looked at the picture, and she said, who's this? And I said, it's Gordon. He survived his wounds that day, and he became a general and governor of Georgia and senator. And she did like a triple take, looked at the picture, looked at me, looked at the picture, looked at me, back and forth. And then, you know, she said, you know, he looks like you. And I said, okay, right. So I'm not going crazy. Somebody else recognized the resemblance.
Right. I really hope that our listeners can go ahead and take a look at some of the photographs that you have on your website. And what is your website address?
It's ConfederateYankee.net.
And they can look there. They can look at Paranormal Underground September issue, which is at www.paranormalunderground.net. And really, the photos are striking, and it's really one of the things that makes you stop and think, wow, that is just uncanny. And there's so many other similarities there. Can you talk a little bit about the physical similarities? I know you guys share some common habits. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, there's some small things like that people might say is a coincidence, but you know, after when do you stop saying coincidence? After the fourth or fifth thing, or after the 20th or 100th? But
right,
there were some small ones like my birthday 9/9/47. The most the lost orders that General Lee had written to cause the really cause the Battle of Antietam were written on 9/9 in 1862. So that's a mild, you could even say that was a coincidence. But I've got markings on my body, on my face, my arms, and my right leg that match up where Gordon was wounded 5 times during the Civil War. He was really wounded more than that, but I haven't been able to find out where some of them were. But
okay.
Yeah, so when you come up with the you know, some people call them birthmarks, but you know, we get scarred up and things like that. Yeah, and I don't remember having them from birth, but and they're subtle, but they're in the exact same positions where Gordon was wounded, where he was shot through the face at Antietam, and where he's hit in the forehead with a mini ball outside of Sharpsburg, Maryland, Sharpsburg, Virginia. Pardon me.
Okay.
And I also was to find out that it was the first book I read that was written about Gordon. The very first page said he was born in Upson County, Georgia, at a young age, moved to the northwest corner of Georgia outside a small town called Lafayette. Well, my father had passed away a couple of years before reading this, and my mother decided to, she didn't want, like a lot of widows, they don't want to stay in the house, you know, and they sell a house.
Mm-hmm.
She went partners with my, and she was in Florida, so she went partners with my sister in a house south Main Street in Lafayette, Georgia. So okay. When you want to do the odds of that, you know, what's the odds of my mother and sister living in the town where Gordon grew up, you know, and I'd never visited right. there and ended up going wow. there. And there just more and more things just kept coming down the pipe. I tell people I was being guided. I was being pushed around like a shopping cart. the places I should be and people I should meet and so on. So.
Okay. Can you talk about any other evidence, some of the most compelling evidence that supports your case in your book, that you've documented in your book, Someone Else's Yesterday?
The most important, well, it's if you put it all together, the markings mm-hmm. and the similarity and looks and so on, and I had a similar job in working on the fire department, you can't get much closer to a combat unit than, you know, fighting fires, and you're doing right. a lot of the same things, you know, defensive mode and so on. But it also a lot of the things came with a knowing.
You just, okay.
I was at the Appomattox Courthouse one time shortly before they were closing the museum, and ran around there, ran upstairs, and saw a table that Gordon had sat at with some of the other generals when they were working out the surrender ceremony and so on. And came down the stairs, and there was a flag draped in the stairwell. It was white except for the canton, which was the St. Andrew's Cross, the Red Cross, all right, in the corner. So it was pretty much like a bedsheet with that canton, with that one portion.
And okay.
That's the flag they used during the ceremony and all that. And when I got down to the bottom of the stairs, there was a print there that had been done by Don Troiani, was to find out later. And I was looking at it, and in that was a picture of John Gordon coming down the road with the remnants of the Army in Northern Virginia and surrendering. It was a formal surrender to General Joshua Morris Chamberlain at the Pierce House in Appomattox Courthouse.
Okay.
And one of the Confederate soldiers was carrying a flag, and it was similar to the one that was hanging in the stairwell. But there was a red bar across the end of it, red stripe.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, something bothered me. I said, that's not right, that's not right. And I called one of the park rangers over if he could ask you a question. And the flag in the stairwell, he said, yeah, the stainless banner, I found out that's what they call it. I said, that one, wasn't that the one that was used in the surrender ceremony and not the one that's in the print here? And he says, you're right, the one in the print here is the third Confederate flag. The stainless banner, the mainly white one, had been so many people thought it was like a surrender flag on the field of battle. They decided to put a red stripe on it, you know, to make it more distinctive.
And, right.
He said that had only become the national flag 2 months before the surrender, and they hadn't been issued to the men in the field yet. He said, so yes, the one in the print is wrong, the one in the stairwell is right. So
okay.
I just walked up to the place, and I'm saying to myself, yeah, I knew there was, you know, but I'm saying, how did I know that?
How did you know? Exactly.
And this was only really two months into my experience, a journey that took me for about almost a decade of different discoveries. But it was just little things like that that just kept mounting up all the time.
Mm-hmm. So that's what you refer to as the knowing, basically.
A knowing, yeah.
A knowing, okay. Yeah, pretty darn impactful, even for me, if you look at them even one case at a time, and then especially when you put them all together. So that's a great example.
If people go to YouTube and they put in reincarnation, born again, they'll see like a 8-minute clip. My portion of the Proof Positive program was on for the mm-hmm. Sci-Fi Channel. They will get to see what I look like. They will get to see Gordon's pictures, hear my story and all that. The only thing that's missing from that program is a lie detector test. They gave me a lie detector test that lasted 3 hours. And, of course, people say, well, if you're nutty enough and you believe the stuff that you're telling them, you're going to pass the lie detector test. But if you listen to the questions, they ask you, are you being deceitful, or did you lie about this, or did you lie about that? Not that,
right.
Do you believe this type of thing.
Right,
so
right.
Paying
okay.
attention. But, you know, there's some people, they say you could have 2,000 angels with affidavits, and you know they wouldn't believe it. And other people don't need any proof. So.
Right. Let me ask you my final question, and that is: in your opinion, how many times do we come back and live again, and does reincarnation ever end?
That's a good one. Now, as far as what's the definition of reincarnation, really. Because when we die, I don't believe we really die, so we don't keep continuing living and dying and living and dying. It's
okay.
One continuous lifetime. It's from our start, and I believe we're eternal creatures, and we go on forever. So there is never really a death.
Okay.
Keep going. You may, now, to answer your question as far as reincarnating back on Earth.
Right.
And I know some people get upset with that because, you know, I believe there's other planes of existence, whether they're just different levels in our stratosphere or whatever, all these things that the scientists have come up with are just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other planets, other universes and stuff like that. A lot of people just concentrate here. They just keep their minds too small and they don't expand it. But I believe there's other levels, other planets and places that we can go and learn. And I think we have a lot of input into
okay.
our lives. And if there's something we need to learn in the physical, that will come back in. And there's a lot of reasons for coming back and living again. It may be something you need to learn. You may owe somebody something. Somebody may owe you. Like Shakespeare said, we're all actors on the stage. We're all players and so on. Well, a lot of times you come back with the same people and work with them. You know, you may have to reciprocate and help them out in their travels. Just like I believe through life there's different triggers and different
mm-hmm.
people and events and things that happen that'll guide us in a certain direction. And of course, having free will, we can always head the opposite direction and so we get straightened out and turned back around. But so I believe you can keep coming back if you want to forever and ever, or you never have to come back, or you never
okay.
have to end in this earthly plane at all.
Okay.
Does that answer
well,
your question?
It sure does. That's great. Thank you so much.
Because
and thanks.
Could mm-hmm. you think of how terrible that would be if you had, because this is a tough, as they say in comedy, they booked this as a tough room. This is a tough place sometimes. It can wear you down. Can you imagine sitting and thinking you have to keep coming back and doing this over and over and over? That'd be terrible. But, you know, we all have our parts to play. So.
Great. Great. Thank you. I'm going to turn it over to the next panelist and Karen. And I enjoyed talking to you today. So who's up next?
Nice talking to you.
Thanks.
Jeffrey, I'd like to ask you, based on what you know about the life of General Gordon, what do you feel are the similarities or differences, if any, regarding the historic accounts of his life?
Oh, boy. That's a tough one also. There was a lot of similarity between us. I didn't know it. It's just looking back at my life and what other people have told me and so on with the photos and things like that. But his feelings. I'll tell my story. I'm in a great position. I'll tell my story to anybody, and I don't care whether they believe or not. I could care less.
Mm-hmm.
All I ask is that people have an open and so on. I go where people ask me to go a lot of times. So I've done about 30, 40 radio shows, you know, and I don't really have to promote my story, and I don't. And if people buy my book, it's okay. And if they listen to the radio, it's okay, but I'll go anyway. I've talked to one-on-one. I've talked to hundreds of people at a time, and it was strange because, well, Gordon's book came out in 1903, and my book came out in 2003, but also after he was finished with his career in politics, which was very much a carry-on of wartime, just carrying that on, you get into politics.
Right.
And he became a lecturer around the United States, and he was considered by some people as being one of the most important people the last half of that century, and not because of his war record, not being a Confederate general or anything. And what it was he was trying to reunite the North and the South. He was very respected in the North and very sought after as a speaker. I tell people I'll go anywhere and I'll talk to anyone. As an example, I was down in Georgia one time, and I spoke at the Auburn Library next to the Martin Luther King Center, Atlanta. Okay, large
mm-hmm.
black audience. 3 or 4 days later, I was up in Lafayette, Georgia, speaking in front of the John P. B. Gordon Post, Sons of Confederate Veterans.
Okay, yeah.
And I told them, the first thing I had to tell them was, I'm not John Gordon. I don't believe I'm John Gordon. I believe I had been John Gordon. So don't try to hit me with any because I'll probably fail them. I'd fail if you asked me about my own life, this lifetime, this time. You asked me something from more than a month ago, and I probably wouldn't be able to tell you. But what I honestly can do is tell you how I feel he would answer your question. And they questioned me for 2 hours, and afterwards they gave me a reunion medal and made me a honorary member. So I guess I answered the questions well.
Yeah, I don't have any pointed questions or anything. I was just wondering, sometimes in history, specifically history, focuses on those main characters in life and not the average everyday man like us. And our lives will pass on to obscurity and never be written about. But General Gordon was written about, and I just wondered if you had maybe felt that there were some things that had been written that weren't entirely accurate, because a lot of times with research, if it's available, it turns out to be the case that what is written is not necessarily an actual account or full truth.
History is some of the best fiction ever written.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I agree 100%.
And I've helped them straighten out photos at the Library of Congress. They had one of Gordon's cousins, James Gordon, that had been killed near Yellow Tavern, one of Jeb Stuart's men. And they had his photos in with Gordon. So, also, Harry Fonds, who's considered the Dean of Gettysburg, wrote a book about Gettysburg the first day. And on the first day of Gettysburg, Gordon's men overran Barlow's Knoll. There was a story about General Gordon meeting up with Barlow, had been wounded on the field, and there was all different versions of it where, you know, he had them removed from the field all the way till they sat down with each other and drank brandy and read letters and things like that. So, it was one of the most endearing and enduring stories of Gettysburg and the Civil War and all that. But for the last 10, 15 years, people have been just poo-pooing it and coming up with the different things saying it never happened and Gordon was a liar and this other stuff. And Harry Fonds was writing a book. He sent his manuscript to Gary Gallagher at the University of Virginia, who is one of probably the most knowledgeable men on the Civil War in the United States. And he read it, and he said, I know a guy you better talk to before you print this, because he was going to say that, you know, that it was a falsehood and all that. And he got a hold of me, and we talked on the phone, and I sent him some information and all that, and he put it in his book. With the help of one of the men, Scott Hartwig at Gettysburg, one time he told me that he remembered coming across a New York Times article that was written on like the 10th or 15th anniversary of the Gettysburg, where Gordon and Barlow had met at Barlow's Knoll again, where they had first met during the Civil War. And the reporter told the whole story just as the story had been told before that. So here it was in the New York Times telling the story, so that along with a lot of other evidence and that the story was restored, kept in place. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. All right. My next.
It was also something strange, because when I was with my uncle one time up in Bridgefield Danbury Line in here in Connecticut, trying to find a old cemetery. Well, my uncle knew where the cemetery was, and my great-great-great-grandmother, Charity Stacy Whitlock, was a full-blooded Susquehannock Indian, was supposed to be buried. So looking through the graveyard, and I came across a couple Whitlock tombstones, relatives. Okay, and I said to my uncle, those are Civil War era tombstones, and one of them was shortly after. I said, one looks like one of them was, you know, around the time of Gettysburg. Well, at Barlow's Knoll at Gettysburg, there's a monument there to the 17th Connecticut. And those two gentlemen lay in those graves that I was related to up there in that cemetery up there by Danbury. One was mortally wounded, and the other was just wounded by Gordon's men. So I had Gordon's men running killing some of my own relatives.
Okay. Okay. All right. My next question. The belief in reincarnation is one of the basic premises of the Hindustan religious doctrine. Has this experience changed your views on religion, and if so, how?
When these things started happening to me and all this, I was wondering whether I was going a little bit goofy, and I started studying more, and I was reading books on the Civil War and books on some New Age books and books on religion, and it was a funny thing. I came to the same conclusion a lot of other people have, that many of the religions, or most of the major religions, if you rip the covers off the books and you take the teachings that are inside and you don't let anybody else know, like the golden rule appears in almost every religion.
That's right.
Just slightly different wording. It's pretty much, I found most of the religions are pretty much the same, you know, with the smoke in the mirror, things like that.
So that's right.
A lot of the problems that have been caused all through our history have been caused by the organized religions. You know, our God's stronger than your God and bigger than your God and can beat up your God and all that stuff. So I think if people just get, you know, it's nice, they want to keep the tradition and all that, but just to keep it very simple, very basic, and go by and find those little nuggets, those little gems. One time, Thomas Jefferson went to find the gospel of Jesus, not about Jesus, but the gospel of Jesus. And he was very scholarly, and he took a Greek Bible and Latin Bible, all these different Bibles, and he went through there trying to pick out what was the teachings of Jesus, and Jesus' actual words and things. And he likened it to picking the diamonds out of the dung. That's how little he found in there.
Right.
But he put that together and came up with the Jefferson Bible. Jefferson Bible, still to this day, I don't think they've changed it. It's given to each senator upon entering the Senate when they're sworn in.
Mm-hmm.
So, religion's a wonderful thing, but it depends on if people are trying to use it for evil or not.
That's right. Okay. All right. And my last question for you, I've read your book. It's very compelling. In your book, though, you mentioned that you feel guided several times. What is it or who is it that you feel guided by?
I believe we have spirit guides. I believe there are angels. I believe in God, a mother God along with a father God. I believe there's a female aspect of God. Intuition. It's like triggers. That what happened to me down there at the Sunken Road, Antietam, was a trigger. That was one of those signposts. It was one of those things, you know, pay attention and notice. Any number of things could be guiding. Who it is, if there is a big who, I think it's just a lot of factors. And I think it could be past relatives, or it could be, you know, like I said, we're actors on the stage, and we come down here sometimes to help others out with the play of their lives and helping them straighten out some of our own stuff. But there could be some people left on the other side that also have this connection with us, you know. And the thing is, we're, I guess, compelled sometimes, or just guided slightly. We're not forced. We can't be forced by anything. That's why I say we get to the signpost in the road, and sometimes we go down the wrong road.
Right.
Because of free will. Sometimes I wish there wasn't free will.
Right. It'd be a lot easier, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. We wouldn't have to learn the same mistake over and over and over again.
That's right. Okay. All right. Well, I just want to thank you very much for answering these questions, and thank you for coming on and doing this today with us. I really do appreciate it. Now, I think, turn you over to Chad now for his questions. And it's very nice meeting you.
It was nice talking to you.
Jeff, what do you think happens to us when our journey through our various lives is complete?
Okay. You know, in a lot of religions, a lot of Native American religions, the circle, sacred circle, everything is circle. And, okay, I'm going to get kind of deep. You could drop a pebble down my throat. You'll have to come back in a week to hear the splash. Oh. But here it goes. I believe that we all came from the same place. We all started the same, out from the same origin. You want to call it God, Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad, Frank, Ethel, I don't care. You can give it any name you want. A lot of people use different names. But that's where we started from. And we are here learning through the experiencing portion of that entity. We are like the fingers. We're going to find out and learn and then come back and, you know, we report and all that. And what okay. we are trying to do was we left where we were, where we our starting point. And we're trying to get to the point where we're back at the origin again. So it's a big circle. It's like we're going through school. This is
yes.
a schoolroom here. We've certainly driven down the road on the highways and stuff and seen a lot of the people that are still in kindergarten, and then we've got people going to graduate school and you know college and stuff like that. But we're at all different levels. So if we all started at the, we all came from God, then we all mm-hmm. are a part of God. And I tell yep. people that we are gods, small g, okay, small g, because if you think about it, we all have the power to create and destroy.
Yes,
and
we
it
do.
All depends on what your intent is when you get up in the morning. You get up in the morning, you decide you're going to go out and help somebody, feed somebody, do something good. That's what you do. Could also get up and walk out that door and pick up a gun and go rob a bank. So that's our free will. We can do as we want. And when it comes to, I mentioned before, the golden rule, if you think of it from where I'm coming from, and Jesus said, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, that's because that other person is us, as a part of us, experiencing life in a different way.
Okay.
Also, Jesus said, as you do to the prisoner, the visiting the person that's sick and so on, you do that unto me. It was very simple. People took his parables and made them literal. They took his where he's being literal and made them parables. And I think it's just that simple.
So you believe we all come from the same?
Yes.
Almost like a soul matrix.
Yeah.
Well, universal consciousness.
All from the same place, and you're given free will, and we're a bunch of unruly kids sometimes.
They're
put in a
yeah.
room, and the parents aren't allowed to go in the room to stop them. They can stand outside the door and say, you better cut it out, and don't make me come in there. But you know, you got yeah. pretty much free reign. We've advanced so much technologically. It's unbelievable. You know,
yeah.
we are the global village. You know, years ago, not that many years ago, there were no planes, and they were crossing the country here in Conestoga wagons, and a piece of mail would take a month to get across country. You know, now you can see things real time on the other side of the
world. Well, the world's a lot smaller place.
Anybody that doesn't believe in God, I just tell them, go to the Hubble website and look at those pictures.
Yes. Yeah, I've seen them. They're very interesting. It's almost beautiful, like a work of art. Also, I've heard people speak of soul groups.
What's that?
Have you soul groups? Have you ever?
Oh, soul groups?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. Like I was saying before, you know, we're all actors on the stage, like Shakespeare said, and people, you know, we're all playing our parts, and it's just like why I think it was a spiritual DNA that kind of formed my looks this
okay.
time. But using the genetics from my parents and so on, that if you've heard of people, you've heard of cellular memory. I've heard of people having this one woman, Claire Sylvia, had a double lung transplant, heart transplant, or something like that, and she started picking up characteristics from the donor that she didn't even know, and so on. She got cravings for beer and chicken McNuggets, and so on. She wrote a wonderful book called Change Your Heart. Well, that's
okay.
because I believe there's a cellular memory. You know, in each one of our cells, if you get into it, and I love looking at the macro and the micro, you get into that cell, there's enough information in that one cell to duplicate the whole body. I saw an experiment one time with heart cells put in a petri dish, and they were all beating at different beats all over the place, and when they pushed them together, they all started beating in unison.
Huh.
So there's a consciousness, even if the cell, there wasn't a brain attached to that. The brain wasn't telling those cells what to do, so there
okay.
was a consciousness there, and years ago, if you asked a scientist, "Do you believe in God?" A lot of them say, "But no, I'm a scientist. I have to see it and all that stuff." You ask nowadays with everything that they've gotten into with the quantum physics and this, you're going out into the universe here, and they ask them the same question. They'll say, "I have to believe. I'm a scientist." But it's just amazing. It's just it's very hard to describe to people because they're so caught up in their, especially now with people worrying about their jobs and keeping their homes and all that. It's hard to get them to spend time with themselves. I used to talk to the guys at the firehouse. I force my story on nobody. If people ask me something, I'll answer it. And you know, some people will be interested, and some people will be very interested and keep following me down the street. Other people will run away like I have the plague. But I believe the people I'm supposed to talk to show up. But I had one of my friends one night saying, "Chief, I believe in things. I believe in solid things like this brick," and he started pounding on the brick on the side of the building. I said, "Okay, Pete, you want to talk about how solid that brick is? What is it made out of? It's all this dirt and clay and so on, and you get down into it, there's all these atoms, and the atoms aren't touching each other, so it's not really solid. It's what we perceive to be solid. The definition we give is solid." I said, "But it's not really solid. It could more, it could be better described as an event appearing before you." And he just looked at me. He said, "Stop it. You're scaring me." But there's people that never stop to spend any time and think about things. And if you get into the micro and the macro, it's just unbelievable. I believe infinity goes both ways, out into the universe and the other way. So.
So what do you think is the message of your story?
Just, I'd like to get people to think and make up their own minds. You have to go on your own journey. You know, people could give you a book on say you're mildly interested in mathematics, so they could give you a library of mathematics. If you never go in the library and never read those books, you're not going to get any of that information that they're offering to you, and you've made that decision. Gore Vidal, one time they said, asked him, "What makes him angry?" And I thought it was funny because he said, "Ignorance, because it's a choice. People choose to be ignorant." Well, if you're given that beautiful library of all the math books and everything, and you don't go in and use it, that's your problem and your decision. But if you do go in and start opening up those books, you'd be surprised what starts coming out of them.
Well, I thank you for being here. I'm going to turn it back over to Karen.
Okay, well, Jeff, again, thank you so much for being with us. I wanted to give you an opportunity to share any final thoughts that you'd like people listening to know.
Very simple. Pay attention. Pay attention, like I was talking before about the library. You know, open that door. If you're offered this library, open the door and go in and start reading some of the books. Spend some time with yourself during the day. It doesn't matter if it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or whatever. Or what I find a lot of times is just before going to sleep or just waking up from sleeping is a lot of the, it's sort of a deep thought period, and because the, you know, you don't have all the hustle bustle of the world around you. We're going to need in the very near future from the things that are coming down the pike economically and all that, and socially, and all that. It's I don't see very good times coming. We're going to need each other more and more. I don't think it's all going to be bad, because I think what we're going to do is find out what really are the important things. You know, when people lose their jobs and their houses and so on, well, you know, that Porsche they had in the garage, well, that's not so important now, you know, and so it'll come down to the basics. If you can't wear it, eat it, or if it doesn't keep the rain off your head, you don't need it. But in order to do this, we've got to work with each other very closely and become more of a, instead of just neighbors, family, and help each other. So that'd be the thing for people to try to get in touch with their inner self. I know it sounds cliche, but find out if they just give a little thought of who they are and what they are and where they come from, because as Daniel Brinkley says, we're all powerful spiritual beings, just most people don't know it.
Okay, thank you so much, Jeff. Everybody say goodbye to Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for being on our podcast.
Thank you, Jeff. It was really good talking with you.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Take care of yourself.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye, Jeff.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So there goes Jeff. You guys ready?
Let's do it.
Ready.
Let's talk. So let's start with Chad. What do you think?
Very interesting. To me, it made a lot of sense because it follows along a lot of the stuff that I've thought myself, you know, as far as the soul groups and the soul matrix and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, JD, what did you think?
It's very compelling. I still don't know what to make of him. I'm on the edge here. I want to believe, and yet, you know, the scientist in me saying, how are you going to prove that type of thing. But I can say this statistically, the things he was talking about and what is in his book, which we didn't cover a lot of course, for time reasons, statistically is impossible to be considered coincidence.
Yeah.
It's the odds against all those similarities are just astronomical. I mean, most people can come up with a few.
Yeah.
But that many. And what really substantiates this is it's been studied and documented. And I wished he would have went into – I don't think he understood my first question.
Yeah.
I really missed an opportunity or two to break in to guide him that way. But toward the end there when he was talking about the cemetery, those were the type of things I was mentioning. He seems to have a knack for knowing where to go and knowing what happened. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, he's in the right place at the right time an awful lot, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well put.
Yeah. Cheryl, what do you think?
Well, I am going to echo both Chad and JD a bit. As far as what Chad was saying, a lot of my personal beliefs do follow Jeffrey Keane's beliefs, and I find his case very compelling. And then I also think that JD touched on this. There's too many things to be coincidence. And I personally don't believe in coincidences. And I think that what Jeff refers to as a knowing or the knowing, I think he said that earlier, there's too many things that he knows that he hasn't studied about that happened to him. And he's looking and he sees these things. And I think it actually happens to us, all of us, every day. But we don't always see these things.
We don't pay attention.
Well, and that's one of the things that Jeff actually talks about a lot, and he touched on it in the end, is that you need to pay attention. Pay attention to what goes on around you. Because I asked him when I interviewed him about kind of how he knew, and he's because, of course, I had just had that past life regression hypnotherapy, and so I was coming from the only way that this came out of me was that it was pulled out of me.
Yeah.
You know? And he said, you pay attention. And it's there. It's there in things you see. It's there in thoughts that pop into your head that just seem sort of random. And, yeah, it makes some sense to me. So I understand. So coincidence, let's talk about that. What do you think about coincidence when there's that many coincidences that pile on top of each other? I agree with Cheryl. I don't believe in coincidence. But I'd be interested to hear what JD and Chad think about that.
Go ahead, Chad.
I do not believe in coincidence. I believe we are led. Now, sometimes we might make the wrong choices, but I think we are led, you know, ultimately where we need to be. You know, I don't think it's a coincidence I am where I am now. You know, it's just what's meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I feel about it.
Yeah.
To me, coincidences can happen. Small coincidences, and I say small, but with something like him where he has birthmarks where the battle scars on General Gordon the myriad of other things that are just put together, it's astronomically, statistically, almost impossible.
Yeah.
It's just almost impossible. I mean, the odds of this are you have a better chance of being struck by a meteor head on than something like this occurring. Now
I'm going to be watching the sky when I walk out of the house.
Me too. I'm going to pay attention. The thing is, I don't know. I really don't know where to go with that. You know, I look at it, like I said, it's very compelling. It makes me think a lot. Of course, you know, his ideas on religious beliefs, I wish more people had ideas like that. That's similar to also to my beliefs. But, you know, and the point that he had mentioned about religion and history and how it's affected history and a lot of the problems caused by that is very true. Historically, that there's no doubt about that. That's not questioned. You can go back through history and see anything from the Crusades or whatever. But back to coincidence, it's compelling. That I hate to use that word over and over and over, but I just don't know what else to say about it. I'm impressed.
Yeah. Compelling is the word that actually, when I think I probably used it in the article, I used it when I talked to him. When you read his book, it is very compelling. And I would encourage people listening, if you get the opportunity, to read the book. It's called Someone Else's Yesterday. And I got my copy online at Amazon.com. I think it's at Barnes & Noble and places like that. So it's an older book. I think it's been out for a few years. But definitely, it's well worth reading. So
yes, it is.
The question that I have for you guys is, what do you think it would take to actually be able to scientifically prove what Jeff is talking about?
I don't know if you could. This is one of those things that would be almost impossible to scientifically prove based on a scientific method. You're looking at empirical evidence. How can you say any of this is empirical, for one thing? You know, you can put out similarities like the birthmarks we talked about, corresponding to the battle scars, the things that happen. In his book, he mentioned about, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't remember what birthday it was. And it might have been his 30th. Yeah, 30th. 30th birthday, he had the jaw pain and was taken to the emergency room. Nothing could be found. The pain subsided. It just so happened that on that exact date, that was the date that General Gordon was shot through the jaw.
When he was 30.
Right, yeah. When he was 30.
Yes.
And, you know, okay, there's another coincidence. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, but proving it, it's ephemeral. It's ephemeral proof, but it's like a court case, okay? You have a lot of circumstantial evidence, and you get enough of it, you can still convict.
It's preponderance of the evidence.
Right. So, you know, scientifically, you look at it like this, and you have a preponderance of evidence here. That's all I can say about it. As Karen mentioned, his book is compelling. Anybody listening out there would do well to read it. It's fascinating, and if it'll do one thing, it will make you think. Whether you believe or you don't believe, it will make you think if you approach it with an open mind.
Yeah. Now, one of the things we didn't get into with Jeffrey, although I did when I talked with him, is that I asked him if he had ever had the past life regression hypnotherapy, and he said no, and he said he never would because people tend to doubt that. What are your thoughts on that as far as past life regression hypnotherapy, Chad?
Well, I've heard that you can actually be led. Mm-hmm. I mean, not always, and I know I've heard your account, and it kind of convinces me maybe otherwise.
Because you're easily led, huh?
Well, you were fighting it all the way.
Oh God, I was fighting hard.
But I think you have more like in India, they do a lot of work with children. And it seems like they don't even have to regress them. They just basically, children, for some reason, tend to remember things from a supposed past life. But past life regression itself, it's just so iffy. You know, it's just, to me, it's one of those areas where it doesn't really.
Yeah.
I don't think it ultimately, it doesn't add anything because there's so many skeptics against it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I just had another past life regression, you know, and I am writing about that right now for the April issue. And this time, she didn't have me say anything. And okay. So she just had me do it all in my mind. And it was really interesting. Again, everything that I saw in my head, all she said was, look at your feet. What do you see? Look at your legs. What do you see? What are you wearing? Are you wearing a hat? What's in your hand? I mean, and, yeah. And this all went on in my head. And
so,
and then no, I looked it up and it all matched.
So no leading questions.
No.
See, that, to me, it's sometimes you have people who tend to lead people through.
Well, I think I'd say that with anything, you're going to have some people that aren't as credible, and then you're going to have others that are credible. And I think that people look at hypnosis or hypnotherapy with some skepticism for a reason, but I also think that it should not automatically discount everything in that area, and that there are probably some cases that where people aren't being led, and mm-hmm. and they're answering what's in their head. Now, if that's a true account of a past life, that's a whole nother discussion. But
well, it could be symbolic, and I think I still don't know if what I saw was actually something real or something symbolic telling me what I needed to know or what I felt I needed to know. So you don't know. It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
So, Cheryl, I noticed that you mentioned at one point when Jeff was talking that something really moved you. What was that?
Let me think about that. Do you remember what question that was?
I think it was when he was talking to Chad.
Oh, okay. I did say that. Yeah, I messaged Karen on the side.
She did.
I believe it was when he was talking to Chad about how we all affect everyone else around us, basically, and that we all need to work together and look at more than what might just be going on day to day. And
that's right.
I think that message for me really hit home, and that, you know, looking beyond reincarnation and that topic, that's a message that I think that we can all use in our lives.
Right.
And that's what I was referring to when I messaged Karen.
Okay. So,
I'd like to chime in for just a second. What we were talking about before with hypnosis, and Chad had mentioned about children and the studies done. Mm-hmm. There's a Dr. Ian Stevenson, who is head of the Department of Psychiatric Medicine, the University of Virginia School of Medicine.
Yep.
And he has done a lot of work on reincarnation with children. And he has found that among the 895 cases of children who claim to remember a previous life, 35% or 309 of them exhibited birthmarks or birth defects.
Yep.
That corresponded to a wound that was usually fatal to the person that they claimed they were the reincarnation of.
Yep.
And I found that very interesting, that he's been doing some really good work. One of the papers he did, if you want to read about that, is called Birthmarks and Birth Defects Corresponding to Wounds on Deceased Persons. And he goes into depth on it. So, there, for one, you have an actual scientist, doctor that's actually studying these things and doing it. And okay, that's all I had to say.
Okay.
I'm sorry for going backwards.
No, that's all right, because actually, talking about kids and past lives, I think I shared this with you, JD. Maybe I didn't. My son, when he was 3, I said to him, and I don't even know why, I just said to him one day, tell me about who you were before I was your mom. And his face lit up like he had been waiting all of his life for me to ask him this question. And he said, oh, well, I was a doctor on a boat to Africa. And he went into this really complex story, which was really fascinating. So, and then the other thing that as you were talking about kids and past lives, when I talked to Jeff last time, he was telling me about a website, and Cheryl actually interviewed the gal who runs the website, Carol Bowman.
Right.
Is it childpastlives.org? Is that right, Cheryl?
That sounds right. Yeah, she basically has a website with a great form. That's at childpastlives.org. www.thecivilwar.org.
Yeah.
And okay. She, you know, you can go to that website and really read some interesting things on there. And Carol Bowman has two books out. Last I checked, one was called Children's Past Lives, and the other was Return from Heaven. She may have more, but those are the two that I'm familiar with. And in talking with Carol Bowman, to me, a lot of the evidence, proof, whatever you want to call it, can come from the documentation of these children's past life accounts. And I think they're very powerful. And some will counter that with children aren't reliable because, you know, they like to embellish or they like to this and that. But I would encourage people to actually research these different studies on children and books on children and then decide.
One thing that this Dr. Stevenson has also studied with children, that's his focus on this, the reincarnation of children, is that they tend to remember their past life up to around the age of 5 years old. And then after that, it seems to fade. So when they're younger, a lot of these accounts, in fact, he's had several cases documented where they've taken the child to a village hundreds of miles away where they have never been, never visited, and they knew the home, they knew the people that lived in it, they knew the relatives, they knew the room that the deceased person lived in and every little aspect of it. It was as if they'd always lived there. And I found that extremely fascinating.
Yeah. Well, have you ever gone somewhere where you've just recognized it or where you've...
Yeah. Deja vu.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I just sort of had an experience like that yesterday. We were down in Portland and we went to, it's called Pittock Mansion, P-I-T-T-O-C-K. And I walked into this place and I just felt this... like I was supposed to be there. It was really interesting. And I don't think that it was necessarily that I was ever had ever lived there, but it was the period furnishings and all of that. It just was so familiar to me.
Wow.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Sounds like another regression session coming up.
I don't know. I've had two. Well, we are going to, in an upcoming podcast, I'm going to have one on the air. So.
Okay. Wow.
Oh, that's going to be fun. That's going to be fun.
That's right. You can hear how much I fight it.
All right. That'll be good. I'm sure.
Well, one of the things I wanted to mention when I was mentioning the childpastlives.org, in the forums, there are, and Jeff is the one who pointed this out to me when I interviewed him, there are parents of kids who are 2-3 years old, and the kids are giving these detailed stories about being a firefighter and what unit they were with and what their helmet said and what the fire trucks did and being in a place where bad men crashed into towers and people jumped off towers and they died there and the towers came crashing down. And I don't know, I sent Cheryl to that. Did you read that, any of that, Cheryl?
I did, and what struck me were that a lot of those details and facts that the children gave were actually verified, things that they would not be able to know, you know, from fire department numbers and just little details that they wouldn't know.
These are young kids.
Right.
So it's fascinating. At the same time, when I first read that, well, when Jeff first told me about that, it sort of gave me chills, and then I read it, and it's amazing. It's hopeful and heartbreaking all at the same time.
That's a good description.
Yeah, it is. Well, and what's interesting with Tanner, my son, is that I have asked him about the conversation that we had about the doctor and the Africa boat and all of that. And he's 12 now. And he says, I remember you telling me about it, but I don't remember any of it. And yet back then, I mean, so it's kind of what JD was saying about that something happens at some point that there is this forgetfulness.
Yeah.
So. All right.
Makes you go,
Yeah. Well, one last thing that I just wanted to bring up is what Jeff was talking about at the very end, which is that we need to rely on one another now and that we're all connected in ways that we don't understand. And that was his message last time, although not necessarily as nearly as topical as it is now with everything that's happening with the economy and things. But that's kind of been the message that he took away from his experiences. And so I just kind of wanted to get everybody's thoughts on that.
I agree with him 100%, not just because of times that he foresees coming down the road, but for any time. We look back on our past and our history and our present even, and we as a species are violent by nature. We always have been since the root of man began. And when you mix politics and religion and different political boundaries and throw all that together, different people have different ideas. And they are so focused on those ideas, they have no room to think of anything else or anyone else. And unfortunately, in a lot of cases, it was either you believe what I believe or else. And a lot of times, what they wanted you to believe was not very good. And I'm referring to things like the Holocaust during World War II and different genocides in Bosnia, things like that. If people would just take the time to realize that we are all one people, that we need to take care of each other. And like he said, the golden rule's found in almost every religion in the world. And it may be worded a little different, but the idea is the same. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And I'm not preaching here by any means, but it is a very good practice, very good idea. And if we just did that, just once a day, we could change not only the lives of other people, but our lives for the better. And I think things would be better. He's on the right track with that message.
Yeah, well said. Chad, any final thoughts?
Well, just the fact that we are all the same. Nobody's any better than anybody else in this world. We are all spiritual beings with, to me, I believe we have the spark of God within us. And people need to take responsibility for their actions and the way they treat others, the way they look at others, and realize that in the end it doesn't matter because we're all the same. We all have to go through the same things. And that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cheryl?
Yeah, I touched on this a little earlier, and I just want to kind of echo what Chad and JD said. I think that the message of be accepting of others' beliefs, even if they're different from your own. Don't automatically judge others as being crazy or strange because they believe in reincarnation or an afterlife or spirits and ghosts and that kind of thing. And I think that that would be great.
When I asked Jeff in our interview the last time if he had any final thoughts, one of the things he said to me is that love lasts forever, that we go on and on. And how would you live if you absolutely knew that to be the truth? I think that's a really good way to look at the world. And, you know, whether that's whether reincarnation is a reality or not, I think that you can't lose if you look at the world that way. We're all connected and we go on and on. So, well, guys, we did pretty good for podcast two. What do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Okay, just to remind people, if you'd like to read Jeff's book, it's Someone Else's Yesterday. If you'd like to read the article about Jeff, it's available in our September issue on our website, www.paranormalunderground.net. And you can also view the video that Jeff was talking about, the proof positive, by going to our YouTube channel, which is Paranormal UG, because we couldn't spell out underground. It was Paranormal UG. Not because we couldn't spell it, because
it was too long.
Anyway, so go to Paranormal UG and you'll find the video there. It's in our linked videos, in our it's a playlist. It's in our playlist under profiles. Yeah. So thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you all.
If you'd like to be a panelist on Paranormal Underground Presents or have a guest or topic suggestion, please email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Thank you for joining us.